This is the Oanda Podcast, brought to you by Jazz FM's Business Breakfast.
This is the Oanda Market Insights Podcast, where each week we preview and review all the latest business and market stories with our very own Oanda Senior Market Analyst, Craig Earlham. What an introduction there for you, Craig. How was it for you?
Yeah, it was really good, really good. You're such a professional.
We try. I've been doing this for a while. Let's start with the two breaking news stories of the day, China's latest GDP figures, and we also had the UK retail numbers out a little bit earlier on. Let's start with China, though. Their economy grew at the slowest pace in three decades last year. That was down to weak consumer spending, rising unemployment, and, of course, the country's trade war with the United States. Having said all that, actually, European equities have been up on those figures. Is that because the expectations were pretty low anyway?
Yeah, I mean, this was bang in line with expectations. So in the last quarter, the economy grew by 6% quarter over year, so compared to the quarter a year earlier. But over the course of the actual entire year, it grew 6.1%, which, as you say, is a pretty much a near three-decade low. But then this was all in line with expectations. We've been watching the economy slow down over the course of the year. We've seen plenty of weak data, which suggested that this is where we were heading for. So given that met market expectations, it's kind of like water off a duck's back ultimately. There's a lot of other data out there which really grabbed people's attention more, which suggests that maybe the economy is turning a bit of a corner. And given that we've already had a trade deal signed between the US and China this week, when you're seeing signs that an economy could be turning a corner at that juncture, then that's really encouraging. Now, don't get me wrong, we're not going to jump back to 8%, 9%, 10% growth that we were seeing a decade ago from China. But if we can maintain levels above 6% in the near term, maybe even push back towards the 6.5% levels, then that's seen as extremely encouraging, not just for the Chinese economy, but the global economy as well. It is the world's second largest economy ultimately. Now, I still think there's obviously a few things we have to reference here. One is the fact that, yes, do you know what, the fixed asset investment, industrial production, retail sales were all stronger than expected. In fact, industrial production was far stronger than expected, so that was really encouraging. The flip side of this, though, is that this is just 1 month of data, so we need to see this repeated two or three times before we start to really take it seriously. And the other thing as well is, yes, there is a phase one trade agreement with the US, but there's still a lot of tariffs still in place. So any idea that things are going to get dramatically better in the near term seem a bit far-fetched, because as long as there's tariffs in place, there's still effectively a trade war, and as long as there's a trade war, the economy suffers.
And we've had, what, 2 years of this trade war with the United States. But as you say, there are hopes of a better relationship with America. And there's been improvements in manufacturing and business confidence data. What do you think is going to happen next?
So I think next, the talks are probably going to continue in the background, but on a far less frequent basis. We have to remember now that this is an election year. It was always quite evident that Trump wanted to get something over the line before the election. He wanted to go into the election with a deal, not in a trade war. And I think he wanted a full comprehensive agreement, but he hasn't managed to get one. So he settled for a phase one, which, if you'd have asked him 2 years ago, will you ever settle for a phase one agreement? He would have said absolutely not. But obviously, with this, the circumstances are such that we are in an election year, and going in with a phase one agreement is better than nothing, because it means you've got $200 billion of purchases committed from China over the next couple of years, covering various sectors, including agriculture, including manufacturing, etc. So from his perspective, selling that to his industrial base is extremely important. So I think he'll still take that as a win. In terms of how meaningful it is, it will have to wait and see. I think it's going to give a little bit of a boost, and it does remove some of the cloud of uncertainty, but there's still a long way to go. But I'm just still not convinced that we're actually going to get there. The tariffs remaining in place, oddly for me, are encouraging in terms of it's encouraging that we are potentially going to have these second round of talks. It's not going to come prior to the election, not in any form of intensity anyway. I think this year could be relatively quiet on the trade front. Slowly but surely you may see Trump turning his attention to Europe, but it'd be really risky business getting involved in a trade war with Europe when you're still technically involved in one with China during an election year. But if you want to really test the economy, I don't see the benefits of that from my perspective. If Trump wants to turn his attention to Europe, the best time to do this is at the end of the year rather than the start.
Fascinating period though, isn't it? Because we're sort of in a political and economic quagmire where there are so many causes and effects mm-hmm. within this scenario over the next, 10, 11 months, where it's anybody's guess as to how Trump will react. Because on the one hand, he's got one eye on the economy. On the other, he's got his larger eye on the election and all the other aspects. We've got Iran in the background mm-hmm. as well. The problems that we've got with Russia. I mean, it is an endless stream of decisions that he's going to make, and he's going to have to think about it in terms of economics and politics.
And this is what makes it so difficult to predict in many senses, because Trump is not your typical politician. If you were talking about Barack Obama or Bill Clinton or one of these other characters who's been in the White House before him, you would be saying, or George Bush for that sake, you'd be looking at this saying, it's an election year, they're not going to do anything crazy. Especially when you've got an economy where you've got the highest levels of unemployment that you've seen in decades, the extremely low levels of unemployment, growth at 2.5% to 3%. You're not going to do anything mad. You're going to say, do you know what? What we do is we let this year just let it run smoothly. And if we manage this correctly, if nothing goes horrendously wrong, if we don't make any huge mistakes, we're going into this election with stock markets at record highs, with unemployment at multi-decade, if not historic lows. Earnings are rising. Companies are performing well. You would struggle to see a scenario whereby Trump loses that election in that sense. Whereas if you start now picking fights with Iran, and as we saw, obviously, the events of the start of this year, if you start a trade war with Europe and that affects the economy and that affects stocks, it feels like a risk not worth taking. The flip side of that, as I keep saying, though, is Trump is not predictable. He's not your stereotypical politician. He may view things differently. And who am I to question the man who won the last election? Therefore, he has a 100% record in these matters. But like I say, we'll have to wait and see.
Before we talk about the UK retail figures, which are just out, let's a quick word about the United States as we're on that theme. Earnings, the latest data was strong, wasn't it?
Yeah, so it's been a bit of a mixed bag week. I mean, obviously it is only the first week, so we've got to bear that in mind. It's mainly the banks that people are focused on this week. JP Morgan got us off to an incredible start. Goldman Sachs was a little bit less encouraging, apart from on the trading side. We've had Wells Fargo, Morgan Stanley, who have I believe have reported some decent earnings. And over the coming weeks, we'll hear from my colleague in New York, Ed Moyer, who tracks this far more closely than I do, who will be able to give us regular weekly updates on how earnings season is progressing. But I think it's been off to a decent start. The area of weakness that we're seeing in the UK economy right now is actually on the high street more so. So it's the kind of Macy's, these types of companies, Coles. But then when you're looking at things like the retail sales figures, which we're getting from the US, and all the consumer activity figures, they're all actually very strong. So the question is, how does that up? Why is it that the high street's performing badly in these major outlets, these well-known brands, massive stores, at a time when the consumer's strong? And that suggests that when we're looking at results from the Walmarts, from Amazon, people who have these this strong online presence, that the results may be much better. So yeah, while there is pockets of weakness in what we've seen, there is certain strengths, and I think that's kind of going to be the story of this earnings season. We've got to remember, the data ahead of this season was that we were going to see an earnings contraction of 2%, the fourth consecutive quarter of an earnings contraction, an ongoing earnings recession, before we bounce back into positive territory next year. While there may be possibility that we could actually just escape that, there is going to be an up and down season where we are going to have big winners and we're also going to have big losers.
Let's talk retail in the United Kingdom then. You just mentioned the United States. British consumers failed to increase their spending in December for a record fifth month in a row, and adding signs of a weakening economy that may indeed prompt the Bank of England to cut interest rates this month. Earlier on in the week, we had the latest inflation data. That's dropped 1.3%, down from 1.5% in November. There's all sorts of reasons for that, but obviously there is a concern that the economy is faltering to such a degree that interest rates could be cut back to the historic lows that we saw a couple of years ago. It looked very unlikely, something like 5% they were talking about for an interest rate cut a few days ago, but now it's something like 75%. What's your opinion?
Yeah, it's. I believe this time last week it was around 5%, and now currently today, at the time of recording, it is 67%. So it's and it has been higher, as you just alluded to a couple of days ago. I think what we've got to remember, and this is almost a frustrating thing about this now, if we hadn't heard from policymakers, I would say this is the market's getting too carried away with weak pieces of data. We have to remember that this data covers November and December, and I've said this over and over again, so apologies for anyone who's listened to the business breakfast, but this ultimately feels like going to the doctors for a health check on January the 1st. You're not going to be in the best condition, so to expect any decent results is probably a bit unnecessarily hopeful. It's pointless, actually, to a great extent, getting a health check in your worst state. Well, the UK economy in November had enormous Brexit uncertainty, enormous political uncertainty because of that mid-December general election. Therefore, we are likely to see a bit of a weakening and a bit of a softening in the economy during those months.
So, and the fact actually, that we've seen a bit of a Boris boost, haven't we, in the last few weeks, which maybe hasn't been seen in those retail figures for December, but there is a bit more confidence around at the moment because of that election result, because of the certainty aspect.
Yeah, and it seems insane to think that we're not going to have seen a bit of a drag as a result of all that uncertainty. So now, granted, the Brexit uncertainty hasn't entirely passed. There is still potential for a WTO Brexit at the end of this year, but that's a huge amount of uncertainty that's passed as a result of getting this deal over the line. The political uncertainty has passed us by now. We've got a massive majority for the Conservative Party in Commons, so there's a parliament that can actually start to get things done. So it's that's a huge amount of uncertainty that's passed, and to believe for a second that all of that doesn't have an impact on people's spending behaviour and on company performance, business performance, all of these things seems a bit strange. So to be talking about cutting interest rates suddenly at the end of this month, it seems very strange to me, because it feels like we're just getting carried away with a piece of data from an unreliable period. Yeah. The other flip side of that as well, though, is that we've also heard from various policymakers who seem to be adding fuel to the fire in a way, suggesting that if there's no improvement in the economic data, then they will favour an interest rate cut. And this is something I find very strange, because we've just gone through a year when there's been plenty of weakness in the economic data, plenty of weakness in the economy, plenty of weakness in other economies. In the global economy, we've seen downward revisions throughout the course of the year. We've seen other central banks, from the Federal Reserve to the ECB to the RBA and on, cutting interest rates, restarting quantitative easing, and the Bank of England stood still because they didn't want to. They clearly didn't want to be cutting rates when they may have to cut them more dramatically in the event of a hard Brexit. Well, now that we've passed through that uncertainty, to just jump straight on the cutting bandwagon seems a bit strange. Why not give it a couple of months and see if the economy naturally bounces back a bit because of that uncertainty has improved? Ultimately, a 25 basis point cut is going to make absolutely no difference to this economy at this moment in time, but you're using the very little ammunition you've got left if there is a more severe downturn at a time when you've got very little evidence that the situation isn't going to improve on its own.
But having said all that, ignoring the retail figures, what about that inflation rate? 1.3%, there'll be people out there who will be calling for a rate cut just to control that. Otherwise, we could get into a situation where we might have deflation.
So the inflation rate dropped to 1.3%. On core inflation, it dropped to 1.4% from 1.7%. More often than not, when you see a sharp decline like that from one month to the next, that's a one-off fact that that's not necessarily a more ingrained pattern. That doesn't mean that
but
we're going to see 0.9%.
The trend is down.
The trend is mildly down, but if you strip out this month, it's actually extremely consistent around the 1.7% mark for much of the last 6, 7, or 8 months. So with that one dip, I think reading too much into one-off pieces of data.
What happened to the target, though, the 2%?
The 2% target is a rough target. It's there or thereabouts that you're looking at. If you've got running inflation at 1.7%, to be cutting interest rates just seems like you're trying to micromanage the situation far too much. The trend is flat around that 1.7% mark. Don't get me wrong, if you see a two more months where we've got 1.4% or less, then by all means, that makes sense, because that suggests that you are seeing a pattern forming. But one-off piece of data doesn't suggest a pattern to me. You wait and see if it bounces back organically as the economy improves, which you would expect a bit of a bounce in the aftermath of all the election and Brexit uncertainty, and then you could. Don't get me wrong, I'm not a Bank of England policymaker. I'm not as qualified as these people, and I'll probably be proven to be wrong should they cut interest rates later this month. I feel like this is a situation whereby policymakers and markets to get a little bit carried away from short-term effects. And if they truly believe that an interest rate cut is warranted, then they should have been taking it more seriously last year.
Okay, let's look ahead to next week briefly. We've got plenty of central bank action, Bank of Japan, Bank of Canada, and ECB.
Yeah, so we're not expecting any changes on this front. All of these central banks are expected to hold pat for now. And it's just going to be interesting to see how they perceive things for the current for the coming year. Bank of Canada has been very quiet up until this point. Bank of Japan at one point looked nailed on to be cutting interest rates, and markets were heavily pricing it in. But that's very much changed now over the last couple of months. They're expected to stay still for the entirety of this year, and even when you get towards the back end of this year, the interest rate probabilities are pretty even in terms of a rate hike or a rate cut. So that suggests that there is a steady as she goes path. ECB, it's still too soon, but again, it's just going to be interesting to see what the Lagarde's and her team's assessment is of how the economy is doing and what impact previous policy pledges are having. Obviously, next week we've also got Davos.
Are you going this time?
I'm not going. There was invites, but unfortunately, that wasn't to be.
Let's be honest. You've never been invited, Craig.
I get regular invites. I get regular invites. Yeah. It's one of those events where I'm sure there's a lot of important conversations.
Do you
think
it has less luster than it used to? There seems to be. Apart from the controversy about Davos over the last few years, being part of it, it doesn't seem quite as important as it used to maybe 10, 15 years ago.
Well, I still think there's probably a lot of conversations that take place between business leaders and the likes, on the sidelines. So it probably is still just as important from that sense. But I think it's just that social attitudes have changed towards it. It's gone from being a place where the leaders of the world effectively meet up, discuss and have conversations, attend seminars, attend panel discussions, blah, 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 to, it's just this event full of elites in the mountains.
They almost make it out to be something sinister, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, they don't help themselves, right? They hold it at a very expensive place in the mountains where they can go skiing and things. They're very much living up to the model that's been placed upon them, if that makes
Deception,
sense.
Yeah,
exactly. So they don't really help themselves. But it is always a relatively interesting week. I'm not sure if it's going to be very relatively market moving. And then there's also a lot of data again next week. So we've got UK labour market data, which will add to the picture we've been built up over the course of this week. We've got PMIs towards the back end of the week as well. So it's going to be far from a boring week, I would say. And of course, we've still got plenty of corporate stories as well from earnings season, which will continue to ramp up more domestically. Things like the Flybe story has been very prevalent over the course of this week. I'm sure we'll continue to hear more on that, especially given the backlash that there's been from the likes of British Airways and Ryanair and EasyJet against the government's decision to effectively bail the airline out.
Tricky one, that one, isn't it? Because there's a political ramification. It's not like the Thomas Cook situation where the UK government decided not to bail them out because maybe it was chasing good money after bad. But this is more to do with the fact that we've had this election where people are talking about the regions of this country and making sure that they are looked after properly and there are transport links. And this is what this is about. This is about routes internally with the United Kingdom, right? Very, very important to the economy, both politically and economically.
But then you go back to the political and what political argument is there bigger right now globally than climate change? And we're talking about a government that's looking to potentially scrap HS2 and save an airline that only flies domestically on routes that trains could solve.
You tried driving down to Newquay recently?
When you're talking about scrapping HS2, which was meant to improve the network connections on a greener scale within the UK, and you're looking at doing so in favour of supporting an airline which has been failing for many years, you can understand why it's proving quite controversial. Then obviously you've also got the state subsidized argument, which is what effectively these other companies are going after.
It isn't a state subsidy though, is it?
Well, I mean, it depends how you're looking at it. The government is stepping in to keep the company afloat. Without the government's intervention, the company...
They're deferring the tax payment, really. That's it, really.
Yeah, but that is seen by BA and others as preferential treatment in order to try and save the company. Okay. So from that perspective, it's in a state intervention.
Who's going to take those routes if Flybe goes down, though? Ryanair? If, for instance, a Ryanair said, OK, we'll take all those slots and therefore those regions will be serviced, you could perhaps say the government's, got less of a point. But if they'll just take the slots that are making a bit of money, then we do need those particular areas.
But that's even more argument once again for why is it taking so long to make big infrastructure decisions in the UK, and why is it when we're looking at options that don't include air travel, for example, when we're looking at options along on the ground, why these decisions are taking so long? And after many years now, it seems, of planning, of discussions, of debates, of everything, we're then looking to scrap it all together and just stick with what we've got effectively. Again, it's a broader discussion, but I think from a political...
Tricky.
It's a politically sensitive one at a time when climate change is such a massive story.
Craig, thanks very much for joining us today. Have a very good week.
From the team behind Jazz FM's Business Breakfast, a daily early morning 30-minute briefing for the day ahead. On air from 6 a.m. Listen to Jazz FM on DAB, online, or just ask Alexa.